This program is brought to you by Emory University.
Our lunch discussion with Lori Teague, the Director and Associate Professor of Emory Dance and Movement Studies Program, Department of Theater and Dance. Alejandro Barca, Instructor in Dance at the Oxford College of Emory University. And our own Philippe Rochat, Professor of Psychology and the Director of the Emory Infant and Child Laboratory. And our presenters today will be talking about self-consciousness and authenticity in dance and developmental psychology. So I'll turn it over to you all. And thank you so much for coming.
I saw you.
Yeah. All right. If you will put your sandwiches down for 1 second. And you're going to stand up. And we're going to close our eyes. And first I want you to just feel your feet and how they connect with the earth. Take a minute to just listen from the body, from all over the body. And now, for the next 30 seconds, with your eyes closed, each of us, we are going to move, and you can move in whatever way you want. It begins now. Let your movement begin to dissolve or come to stillness. And you can open your eyes. Okay, let's have a seat. So I hope we have time to step back into this experience again after we talk, we wanted to start out with just asking you what that felt like. Anything it brought up for you, or what you remember you did, or because that was an improv. Yeah.
Excitement.
Yeah. Do you know what felt exciting?
To just move. I think it's in a lab setting. It's not welcome always. It's definitely not in our lab to be able to do something like that. Just if you feel the urge to close your eyes and be present, that was exciting. And also, I had back surgery in August, so I'm just getting into movement again. And so my body just craved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Who opened your eyes?
You did?
Yeah.
Do you know why you did?
What?
Yeah.
I think it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I was uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
Not just because, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was a little uncomfortable. Like, what should I be doing? I could move in and out of the experience of just being there.
Yeah.
In my body.
Yeah. How about, did you raise your hand about being uncomfortable?
Like disorient, like just because you don't know if you're going to run into something, or you lose your spatial bearings.
That's when you open your eyes.
Yeah.
I have opened eyes.
Yes.
Did you? Yeah, same thing. I only opened them briefly, but I wanted to stretch, and I was really afraid I was just going to hit this guy in the face.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good reason. I mean, whatever reason you did is good. It's not bad or good. But, I think one of the things that your feedback is going to help us step into explaining to you or describing to you all of those potential powerful things, which is feedback from within and feedback from the outside. Let me ask two more questions. Did anyone feel they were, maybe you did, that they were, in that 30 seconds, they were listening to the body, they were trusting just impulses, you know, following impulses?
I see you shaking your head.
I'm more aware about my surroundings. I study self-consciousness, and they say research is me-search, so
yeah.
I'm more aware about other people, and it's uncomfortable.
So with your eyes closed, what was going on when you can't see other people?
I'm like, this feels weird. I wonder what other people are doing, and if they don't open their eyes, and
yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Got it. Got it.
So, can we...
Yes,
so
yeah.
Let me give you a little bit of context of this conversation, interdisciplinary conversation. So, I've known Laurie for quite some time, but, you know, not very closely, but I know her involvement in dance, and I've seen some dance over the years. And Alejandro, I met him at the Garner Center for the faculty, you know, annual meeting, and somehow we connected with Stella and Danny, of course. And so Alejandro, like a few weeks later, invited me to a dance performance that was directed by Laurie's and performed by Laurie's student, undergrad student. And I was very impressed, I mean, by what this double major were capable of doing. It was just incredible. There were pieces that were sometimes close to 20 minutes long, very complex and poignant, and these were, you know, undergrad students. So then we met around the non-alcoholic beverage, Joshua Center, under the, you know, the Greek statues over there. And I asked them, I was really curious about, you know, when you're spectators of this dance performance, you have sometimes 20, 25 dancers, and it's hard to decide where to look. Okay? So typically, you zero in on one dancer. I mean, I think that's my own experience. And I asked the question, I said, why this individual rather that other dancer? And there is something about how they move. I would say, and they move with a flow that is different from the others. If you go to a concert and you have 50 musicians or 40 musicians, and they are students also, you will notice that there are only a few that seem to get driven to the music, that are moving with the music and all that. And so the question is that how you experience that, and we link this question asking why some people seem to be more into what they do than others, and they are pulling it, especially in relation to that. So we label that as the what is authenticity, and it is more or less authentic. As a researcher, I'm a child psychologist, I study, I'm interested in consciousness, and in particular the emergence of self-consciousness and social emotion like guilt and shame. Kids start to lose their quote-unquote natural or their flow of doing that, typically at around 21 months. When they start to recognize themselves in a mirror. And So for me, it was easy to connect my own work, or our own work, I should say, which are two students here, with the issue about authenticity and dance. And I started a conversation, then I brought that to Dean and said it would be interesting to have what we do today. So to give you very briefly, we have a lot of things I think we can talk about. So I would like to show you like a video clip that we should illustrate what I mean by losing your authenticity in child development. So this is an accidental video that I took years ago. We're doing the neuro-mark test with many kids. For those who don't know, you surreptitiously put a mark on the forehead of the child, and when we are sure that he or she hasn't noticed that his mark, we confront them with their own speculative image, and to see whether they're gonna self-refer by going and touching straight toward the mark, typically removing it and so on. But I was also very interested, and always been very interested, with something that I find uniquely human, you are claiming that it is that the near self-recognition in humans is accompanied typically with self-conscious emotions such as embarrassment and shame that I construe as being radically exacerbated or a unique mark of human nature. So we brought this kid, but the kid came with a brother who was 4 years old, and we marked both the siblings, and we asked the older kid that he could come if he wanted to see the testing. He said, "Be quiet! You stay in the back. You say nothing." Okay. So what you will see is that the little girl does not pass the earmark test. She stared at herself, and the sibling has really a hard time not to tell her, "Look what you have on your forehead," and all that. And he leans forward. You can see it's very short. He leans forward, and suddenly he sees himself in a way and realizes that he has a mark on the forehead. Mm-hmm. And what I want you to do is just this fraction of a second, the change of attitude of the kid. That for me is an expression of how one loses its nature. Okay. So the mirror is there both. The mirror is lifted. You see, he leans. He sees himself. He shakes. He doesn't touch it, and look at the change of attitude. And he starts. It's too bad there is no sound. I don't know why. Okay, I'm gonna play it again with the sound.
Okay.
There is no sound. So he sees himself, he sees the thing, and he shakes his head, he inhibits the drive to remove it, and he becomes self-conscious. I mean, it's something before the child, okay? And so over the years, we've been studying that in different manipulations, but to look at the emergence of this self-conscious. So the question is that in art, in dance, I'm very interested to know how instructive movements and creating performance, how one deal with these issues of abandoning yourself in the performance. And that's what is that's what we mean here by authenticity. And we already had quite a few interesting conversations, and we do connect, it's a good example of interdisciplinary conversation around the topic that we share from different perspectives.
So maybe this is a really good jumping off point. As a dancer, a lot of people ask, so when did you start dancing? And I started formally training later on in life. But my first memory of dancing is as a child, but not the typical, I'm going to bring everyone into a room and sit you down and perform for you. So my background is I grew up in a traditional Mexican family. There's always music going on. And so it just so happened one day there was music in a room at my grandmother's house and there was a family function. And I just went wild and was dancing. And then people started noticing and watching. And then they came in the room and kind of egged me on. But it was not this thing of, I'm doing this for you. It was more of a self thing that I felt more connected to my body in that moment and fully aware and alive. And there was something that translated to my family. And then later on, when I started taking more formal classes, it was this back and forth. When I started training, certain teachers were like, you have a natural way of moving. But then as I trained more, those same teachers were like, what happened to that dancer? Now you're becoming more aware and you're redirecting your thoughts to try to replicate as opposed to really just embodying and being in the movement. And so that's kind of how, at least I can say, we approach training dancers is, yes, there is the form that speaks to them, and certain dancers have different dispositions either to form or to performance. And it's about, on the one hand, with those that have more training, trying to not undo the training, but undo that desire to kind of put on a show for someone and project something, because yes, we are projecting, but then what's most relatable in watching dancers and the reason why someone will watch one person is because they are more in the task and in their body and doing, again, the task at hand, as opposed to trying to present something to someone. And the way we do that as dancers and educators is similar to what y'all just did, of getting the dancers to close their eyes and focus only on themselves as opposed to all the external information happening.
So we want to try to give you some more information about how we do that, training, exposing dancers to somatic practices. But I think the other big piece of this is improvisation. Most dancers, I would say, I grew up in a small town, so what was available to me was tap. And most dancers are learning steps, and we get really great at that. So it's you're observing something and you're imitating it, not necessarily embodying it. I never understood how to embody something. I'm sure I had natural talent, and maybe I had embodied things, but that word was not part of my consciousness growing up. So my introduction to improvisation was also in college. And I definitely had found myself having an affinity to modern or contemporary dance because it was about my language and developing that more than ballet for me. And I think knowing myself now, I'm a very casual person, and I think the formality of ballet just didn't fit me. It was just it's beautiful, but it's not me, So a lot of contemporary dance today is authentic. It is about the self, and without giving you sort of a history of contemporary dance, it just didn't begin that way because it emerged from ballet and rebelling from that. People were trying to find their own voice, but there was still a lot of form to it. And what we see now on the stage is a letting go or release. There's a lot more improvisational training for dancers for them to figure that out. I teach improvisation here, and I would say that is the biggest thing I run into is inhibition, is just even I think they're letting go, and then they're still writing in their journals, as you felt today with your eyes closed, that but people are looking at me, you know, and I'm used to doing something that someone, I'm good at doing something if you tell me to do it like this. I have the skill set to do that, but I'm not so sure about putting my own stuff out in the world, you know. They begin to shed that, of course, as we go. And then the other big piece is just what is somatic training. So what we did earlier, what you did, is called authentic movement, and it is a practice actually in the psychology world as well. It's a therapeutic practice, but it's been expanded to help us access our creativity in different ways, to trust impulses, and to be listening more from the inside. So I would say one of the biggest things that we are retraining dancers is to drop their weight, listen to their breath, and move from that place first. So how do we do that with our eyes open, you know? When we have feedback from an audience and we are relating to other movers, and the short answer is some of that is just practice, that the more the body knows and you're familiar, that your leg, you know what the leg feels like here or the back or whatever, you get more and more comfortable and you gain confidence. The other is, I guess, prioritizing the internal landscape while you're dancing. You know, how can these two things coexist? Because you are still projecting. If you're performing, you're projecting something. So,
you just see that I showed, I mean, that was this four-year-old expressed this inhibition you're talking about. He suddenly kind of frozen, reach for that, but doesn't reach, he starts to hesitate. There's this whole rational that comes into play of being evaluated. Mm-hmm. That's what Sarah, for example, is studying. So that one thing. But so it's about this issue of self-control and instead of talking about authenticity, being in the flow, like letting yourself go with something. We all heard about that. Good teachers, typically, if you remember the teacher who we loved, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think we share most of us that there are people who are passionate and they would abandon themselves in the topic. That we get somehow in a trance, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I don't know, it happens to us as teacher, but what is really puzzling is that on one hand, you reach this zone, this flow, but you're always aware of projecting. That's what we discussed this morning. So the question that I have is that how do you combine this abandonment into your own, you know, whatever, movements in terms of thoughts or even in terms of writing or improv, playing music, okay? And in the same time keeping track of your audience and projecting because you are performing. So you have an audience there. And so I'm very intrigued with the issue, how you balance that two things.
I actually want to, because I don't know the answer to this, what do you do before you perform? What is your warm-up?
It's a variety of things. And that I was going to say, like, there's a duality in the training of, one, self-consciousness of, and especially before a performance, of knowing the actual movement and critiquing it, like consciousness in terms of, I'm going to think critically, I'm aware, or really, I'm going to think critically, and this is supposed to be here, and that's there, and that's how I'm conscious. And then, from there, taking that a step further, consciousness in terms of awareness of, I have habituated my body to whatever it's supposed to be doing in the moment or for the performance, and allowing my muscles to remember that, so that, and especially with the preliminary work of thinking through it, so that then once I step on stage, I allow the other work that I've done of listening to my breath, understanding where my weight is, and really getting inside my body, so that I can, again, just do the task at hand, which is dancing, and I don't have to think, okay, is my leg really here, or is my arm really there? It's trying to override that preliminary impulse that we have to then judge and critique and fix and really get in there and do the work, because then as a performer, when you're doing that, that's what the audience sees. You, I'm sure you've been in a performance or maybe you've written something. It's like, I read this, but it looks very clinical, as, and it's not really my voice. We talked about writing. And same thing with musicians. Of, I'm sure they practice at home, but it's the ones that allow themselves to let that practice live in a way that gives them...
So easy to approach it that when you talk about muscle memory and all that, which is pretty esoteric for for some people, but is it that you automatize these things, that you somehow internalize the movement, the succession? You don't have to, up to a point, you don't have to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that, you know, the Olympic, the guy who goes through giant slalom, they simulate that. They're on top of the mountain doing like this. And then, you know, they can actually reach a level where they have another level of control.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case? Is that you have an awareness of your audience as you are performing, right?
Yes. I mean, it's hard not to, because there's people right there. And so then again, there is that internal dialogue of, okay, yes, on the one hand, I'm aware and they're performing, or I'm performing for them and they're watching me, but you also can't let that, you can't internalize that. You have to stay present in your body in the moment, because the moment you start being distracted by other things. A little bit. Enough to still fulfill the task at hand.
Sometimes when we perform, we're not in a space where we actually can see the audience. At the Schwartz Center, you can see the first couple of rows, you know. I just had a show a couple of weeks ago, and I was telling Alex that of four performances, the first night is when I felt the most authentic. And I was trying to be every night. So I was like, what about that? Why... What feedback did I get from my show, from my performing, that would say that? Like a conversation, it was me. I felt the most in the moment in every move, and I was also speaking while I was moving, that I was really just having a conversation with the audience. I felt really calm. And I wasn't ahead of myself, you know. I know what the next line is, but I've got to really be just right here. And in a way, there was comedic timing, and it was more comedic that night because I was listening to my timing. So it's a feedback of, as you train movers to be sensitive to space, time, energy, and the body, when you're performing, you are maintaining that sensitivity. But there's a huge unknown. I mean, even an Olympic athlete, as many times as they've done that jump, they can't predict if it's going to go well or not. I mean, they kind of can't, you know. And for us, there's that element too. Are you going to be on your standing leg clearly? And you've practiced, but you can be a little off. And you respond to that as opposed to judging it. You have to just keep going, you know, as we all do in life.
Do dancers say, don't think too much?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, you've identified three areas where people do this. One is dance, one is jazz.
Yes, jazz improvisation, yeah.
You practice, you do scales, and then we go play and forget all that.
Yeah.
And say baseball, where... You know, batters take hundreds of swings, they get up the plate, they say, no, You know, there's a sense in which, you know, you can't have the optimal performance unless you let something go. So what is it that you let
we're letting go?
I mean, is it the slow cut?
You know, people talk about it, I mean, for millennia, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, for me, it's connected. It's losing hyper-reflexivity, which hinders. We talk about confidence, gaining confidence. You know, we know we're being evaluated, but you know, as Laurie said this morning, when you get older, you know, you care less about what people think, and you know, there's a few advantages of aging. but I mean, that you know, I think that the abandoning yourself when you write, for example, I thought it was interesting. Someone said, I don't know if it, you, Gloria or Alejandro, is that you recognize your voice. There are pieces that you're too mechanical, and other pieces that, even if it's, you know, a bit loose, but you're happy because it's your voice. You know, but,
Well, I mean, there's maybe a flip side. I mean, sort of enhanced performance in a when there's an audience, right? I mean, there are audience effects, right? And the basic mechanisms for those, where you see people run faster, or but it's even low organisms will do this as well. But you'll see when there is an audience, and so. You know, I could imagine that being conscious of the audience could also enhance a communicative. Now, whether that's about the particular
move, it can put you on the edge,
right? Sort of. So, I was wondering if you all think about that kind of flip side of this sort of self consciousness, or this being aware at least that you're in a dialogue or a communication with an audience.
Well, I think one, it's in a lot of situations, especially performing, it's difficult because the body has its own response. Adrenaline is going to kick in regardless. And I think it's understanding that the body has its own mechanisms to make itself work. And it goes maybe back to this of what you're letting go of is that critical nature of understanding my body is making me go faster. And so it's like trying to get that out of your brain that like I'm doing this and this is happening, and coming back to I need to stick with myself and my body and what I'm trying to do, and not be concerned with the how other people qualify it or see it, or how then you yourself qualify.
We should maybe show.
Yeah, I was saying because
I just was back to your. I love the list you gave, but the for like a batter, and I've never been an athlete, but something where there would be a lot of pressure on that moment. Everyone's looking at this one thing is. Being, I would probably just watch the ball. You know, if I could just focus on this bat has got to meet that ball. And I do think that we use imagery in dance, it's effective, to close the eyes and say, I'm going to imagine myself doing that triple pirouette, you know, of just that it can, that helps, and it is projecting something, but you also have to be in the moment as opposed to the anxiety of what if I don't hit it? What if I, you know?
So when you're in the moment,
yeah.
Do you feel your body better?
Yes.
Because, you know, batters say when they're really in a good groove, that baseball looks like a grapefruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it seems really big. They can't.
Yeah.
And going back to what Lori said, in teaching ballet and in taking ballet, instructors will say, decide how many turns you're doing first, as opposed to getting to it and trying to figure out how you're going to do it. Because then if you have it in your brain, I'm doing one clean one or a clean double or seven. If I know what's happening, all I have to do is trust that my body is going to do the things I've trained it to do, and physics is going to take care of the rest. And there you go.
We should. This clip, so another form of improvisation that has emerged in the world is called Gaga, and it was developed by an Israeli man, Ohad Naharin. So this clip is Ohad coaching one of his dancers, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
If you have a chance, if you have Netflix, you should watch the documentary of this guy. It's really...
It's called Mr. Gaga. Gaga.
It's just... remarkable. This is an excerpt that we could, but I hope this is the sound.
Yes.
Ooh, I can't hear it well, though. Can you go to this little sound thing right there? Oh, it's way up.
Beautiful.
Okay, there we go.
Really beautiful. Let's stop. Maya, you need to create the rhythm of a fall. You're really slowing down. Way too much control. Did you sense it? Your hand was ready. You need to lose conscience when you're up, not when you're down, before you fall. Lose it now. Are you okay? You need to find a way to let go. Instead of going back, just let it happen. Almost. But you got in your head too much. But we shouldn't see. The more you let go everywhere in your body at once, the softness of your flesh will protect you. Are you stressed?
No.
So do it again.
So I think there, it's like you see her overriding her biological response to save and protect her body. And it seems a bit intense by him asking her to do it over and over again. But that, like, our job as dancers is to do that over and over enough so that it's ingrained on a muscular level, but also like even on a cellular level of just being able to kind of release that, as opposed to, okay, I'm going to release, but I know I'm going to fall and it's going to hurt. And it's like, you just kind of do it, which is an easy explanation.
When I first came to Emory years ago, I studied Hobby before. We bought a mat, and we would have an infrared camera filming them in the dark. We would disorient them, and I would film in slow motion and look how they fall. And it's amazing how baby fall. I mean, they never hurt themselves. But you see it's like she did at the very end. It's a complete relaxed way. There's no resistance. If you ski and you're getting older than me, I'm afraid to fall. And I tense up like that, and I don't fall anymore.
Yeah.
Because there are ways of falling that that baby know how to lose, because we anticipate things.
So another word when you were first talking about coming to the dance concert in answering your question would be to say, you may be drawn to a dancer because you think they're being more honest. Mm-hmm. And he said, what do you mean by that? And we were trying to explain, well, how do we help students find who they are in their movement and the most honest way of performing it, not projecting something? And this is what I mean by dance being more like this today, or contemporary modern dance is, the beginnings of modern dance were more about gravity and not about upward stress, but like natural earthy things. And they do, some of them just literally lack that in their training. They have been, again, creating shapes and learning steps and things like that. So even in a tendu or an arabesque or something, like feeling instead of the line, what you see, we will get to that, you will achieve that, but can you feel how your scapula is connected to your lats? Do you understand how your breath helps you go to a releve? So there are a million internal things and processes that we teach them about that in their training. So,
Can I ask? I'm not sure I'm getting fully the concept of authenticity, which probably says something about me.
But we
were talking about focus and concentration and fluidity. And I'm wondering is it just about not being distracted, about being aware of your body, about being controlled and skilled in your emotions? Is that what we're talking about? Or is there something more about this idea that you're expressing something, not necessarily thinking about communicating, but just expressing something? Is authenticity just this focus, this fluidity, or is there something more to the concept?
In dance.
Yeah.
Or in
This might be a weird answer. I think there's something about, there's almost like a neutrality in it. Yes, you are expressing something, but that's not the main concern. You're allowing it to exist in its totality. And be inside of it, or more inside of it, and less concerned with how it's being perceived. because I think there's a there's an honesty in that, and that to me reads as authenticity.
Understanding your intention behind your movement, why knowing why you're doing it, why you're expressing that emotion, or what or how you feel that particular line or shape in your body. And again, some movers just do. They do it, but they're not, they really aren't fully present when they're doing it. It's a, it's, I'm going to put it in the category of it's an imitation of something, but when you really feel it, you believe it. So I don't know how that couldn't come across if you're not, if you're really believing what you're doing. I mean, I think in life we all have moments where we, I was saying growing up in the South, and I am a friendly person, but I've also been trained to go, hey, how you doing? You know, good, nice to meet you. The greeting thing. And sometimes I don't want to do that. You know, like, to be authentic, sometimes I don't want to be in that space. But we all, we are all are reading situations, I think, as to what they need. And I think we're always doing that as performers. You know, we're trying to be, have we answered your question? Or getting
I don't know. It's a pretty vague question. But what you were saying just now makes me think a little bit about this concept of honest signaling that we sometimes talk about. It's like you're saying, how do I know that you're being authentic? Is you do something that convinces me you couldn't do it if you were thinking about what you were doing. Or, you know, if you were trying to convince me of something, you wouldn't be able to do what you just did. You know, and that is makes it authentic. It has to be that fluid that I know you're not thinking about what I'm thinking. You're just doing.
The concept of authenticity is completely elusive, in my opinion. And for my take is very down to earth. Is the fact I'm asking, why am I focusing more on that dancer than any of the others? Okay, and I said there is something that is more genuine, authentic, whatever that means. And so what is it? I mean, that's really the question. And I think that when someone is really in, like a pastry chef, you know, if he's really into his act, you see it. Sometimes you go to a sushi bar, you see this guy that are completely absorbed. And there's something for me, and I think for a lot of people, that is particularly grabbing, the fact that they abandon themselves into that. Then we can, I can relate that to that. If I do, I feel good about my teaching, typically is because I really, I was convinced about the how interesting the thing I was talking about. Okay. Now, we were talking this morning, I just want to read, the issue of authenticity is elusive, not only because it's hard to grasp, but also it applies to anything. So let's think, since you are, paleontologists, whatever you want to call that. Let's think about how we deal with ancient monument ruins. Okay, so there are different views on creating these places that are part of the human patrimony, you know, the Machu Picchu and certain things like that. If there's one way is Viollet-le-Duc, which was the French guy, I'm dropping a name, but it was interesting, because he tried to reconstruct all the medieval city and town you see in France, they are basically reconstructed. Paris is a reconstruction, okay, you reconstruct this. Or you have the other thing, so let's the mark of time going, you have to imagine a bit how it was, okay? So it's all the issue and the debate that it's around authenticity. You know, what is really authentic? What is the best way to recapture this thing? And I think that it's, I see some analogy with what we are talking about also in the realm of architecture, in the realm of literature also, you know, a dialogue of Dostoevsky, there's something that is grabbing because it's so embodied. And I mean, you can, a good literature for me, you want to read out loud, you know, to yourself, not with an audience, because I don't know, it's mysterious, it's grabbing, it's real, because that's what we can, there's a consensus what we feel that that was a great spectacle or not. And I think that it pertains to this thing that is very elusive, that's what we're trying to talk about.
Yeah.
All right. this is very interesting. Thank you. I'm sorry I came in late, but as you want to explore authenticity further, as you're all talking, I'm hearing on one side there's a certain physicality of it. So you say the dialogue in a piece of literature is embodied, and you know how you spoke about your body, but also then there's this element of conversation. My own perspective to linger on the ancient world, is in ancient Greece. So, I mean, you're talking, in those terms of the Dionysian, right? So that's a whole kind of category. But at least part of that is ritual. And I wonder, so it's not just that you're authentic when you go and practice or have a moment alone or with a partner, but you're before an audience. And the audience is coming in a very formalized way, and it's understood as a special kind of separate sublime space. I wonder if you think about that at all, and whether that contributes to what we're trying to describe here, the sort of specialness of that setting, in addition to all the other things that you've said.
Well, I'll go back to the moment again in the opening of this last concert, because there were some comedic lines, and in rehearsal I had no audience, and so getting in before the tech week, I was really getting nervous. I was just like, I don't know if this is going to be funny or not. But because I got feedback, there was laughter. I'm sure that grounded me a little differently, and then it gave me. I'm sure I wasn't literally conscious, because it's just happening so quickly. To feeling good about what was happening, and that. But quite often we don't, if it's not comedic, it's not that you're hearing someone go, you really don't know how they feel. And I would say then I lean mostly into who I'm dancing with on stage. And, I put that at the top of the list of, it's my connection with you or the music or the space, and it's also knowing those things really well. And so that's what practicing helps you know all those details. And then you discover more when you're performing.
So in terms of movement, I think a really nice way to get to the authentic place is to show how you get from point A to point B. And you're revealing. And I think that's what makes it authentic, at least for me. For me, you have this inner scaffolding that's working and an effort quality you use to get from point A to point B, whether it, what you were talking about, not just getting to a position, but how do you get to that position? And I think that is a way to really connect to a performer, is that you're not just seeing these movements. It's the flow you were talking about really using your breath and grounding yourself on using gravity and the floor to push into a certain position. And I think that just uses all qualities of your body, and it's very captivating.
I actually think that you just triggered something for me. When I'm an audience member, whether I've gone to see a film or some other kind of performance, if I walk away and it wasn't my thing, or I didn't connect to everything, I really reflect a lot about on what was that. And sometimes I bump into, I did have expectations and they weren't met. And so I try now as much as possible to also be in the moment as an audience member, and to say, I'm not going to design in my head what I think this is. I didn't see the trailer, or whatever, and be with it and let it tell me. And I can still like it or not like it at the end, but I think we all sometimes carry expectations of a situation before we, even with people and how we relate, what you expect of your mother, what you think your friend should have done for you or whatever, instead of being just in that moment with them and dealing or responding to what is there. Not what you need to be there, or telling them what you need to have.
And maybe going back to the whole ritual bit and understanding that you're working with a partner, feeling that energy of, I think the ritual of performance sets a tone, and there is a certain energetic exchange and a lot of imaginary work happening in the studio beforehand. And so then when you go into the theater, it just adds another tone, another color to that. And because we train in consciousness on the one hand as awareness of that, that's something that we're constantly perceiving and allowing to permeate to us as the performer. Because then if we're just on autopilot, not reading the energy of your partner or of the people watching you, then it becomes less about that sharing and it becomes a little less maybe authentic because you're driving a goal as opposed to, again, letting it exist as a thing and it, everyone kind of experiencing that on the same level.
Talking about ritual, I'm thinking of, you're an anthropologist, right?
I'm a philosopher.
You're a philosopher, okay. But, well, this guy, Jean Rouche, maybe you heard of him, this ethnographer, visual ethnographer, who did breakthrough in the 60s movies of ritual and trance, okay? So, so there's this group reenactment, improv, where they really abandon it and they dissociate and get into trance, speaking tongue and stuff like that. So, you know, whether we can talk about authenticity there, it's kind of hard. And I think that there's a difference between being in a trance, like a hypnotic trance, that anybody can be. I mean, it's just simply being very relaxed. So you are relaxed, you can let go of things, but you're still aware of the world around, okay? So you're not... to talk about authenticity in this realm, I don't think that's exactly what we're talking about. So ritual and trance, it's kind of a trance-like state. I was thinking also, you know, when we look at a movie, we go to a theater, there are some actor that we detect as not being that great, okay? He was or she was a great, right? The other, like that. So what is the difference between these two? I mean, it's very puzzling. You know, what makes one person, so Tim McDonald would be a great person to ask about that, about acting. And what it takes for someone to be recognized as a good actor, that for me connects with this elusive idea of authenticity. You know, it's authenticity in what you do, you know, how you do it. It's not much more than reaching your true self or something like that. It's really the pastry chef who is into the job and has a display, a flow that is remarkable and distinguish this pastry chef from another pastry chef who is maybe a little more looking around and checking and be aware of the evaluation of others and so forth. And in my work, I'm fascinated by what is the determination, what makes the kid become so sensitive to the evaluation of others and lose. I mean, you know, I don't want to idolize the childhood, but there's some, when you look at a baby playing with a rabbit, you know, there's an innocence in the play that is unmistakable, but you lose that innocence at one point because you factor all this in. And performing that to be a good dancer, good actor, I think you have to somehow, it's simple, but we learn to rediscover this element, but in performing that, it's pretty amazingly complex.
The other thing that's interesting to me is the affinity we have to certain forms, and I'm really stereotyping, so I'm going to preface this by saying that, but in when a form like ballet is more designed, even romance is suggested. It's not literal touch and love and, you know, all of that. It's the suggestion of that through the design of the movement, which is really beautiful. That's also true sometimes in jazz and Broadway dance and things like that. Modern dance is a mixture of all of those things, but we are trying to get students sometimes to access their emotions, and they don't all want to, you know. They're not used to that, and so I'm trying to think of a clear example of just saying, if I said, be angry with your elbows, And I felt like they were kind of pretending to do that. But they've got to, like an actor would, I think, is they've got to figure out a situation they've been angry in, you know. And then they're going to decide, this is anger, you know, or, you know, maybe you hold your anger in. Maybe you're a little, you know, we all express our anger differently and we all express love and all emotions. So that's what's exciting to me, is try to get them to find their answer to it, not someone else's. That is my definition of authenticity.
Yeah, and I think it's a letting go of the fear of being perfect.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I think it's really easy, like you're saying, if you are watching someone and you have to replicate a dance movement, it's letting go that it doesn't have to be exactly like the teacher's movement or like what we stereotype as what anger should look like. It's your own expression of what this emotion is or what this movement does to you or how the music feels in you. But like, you have to let go of what perfection is.
I would, unless someone, or you have more to say, but are you crying?
No, I have something in my eye.
Are you being so moved
by this conversation?
I'd love to return to what we started with by moving. Are you open to that?
I mean, me, of course, but you know, you can do it.
I brought some handouts about authentic movement. I just wanted to tell you what it in its purest form. You have you partner up, and you have a witness and then a mover, and then you reverse roles. And after you move, and you move for, you can move for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, and you don't have to remember anything you do as a mover because you have a witness, and the witness does not tell you what they think it meant or anything like that. They're just saying, you were on the floor a lot. I noticed that you started with your head. You covered a lot of space. It's just a very, again, neutral, I guess, or objective way of saying that. So to be continued, I'd love to share that with this faculty or this space. It's healing. It helps you trust your impulses and trust your creativity. So all I wanted to do is return to what we did with our eyes closed, and to, now that we've had this conversation, to let you trust and feel your body and see what comes out of your body now. But we won't do it with the witness because that takes more time. But would y'all be open to that? And there's no way to do it wrong. It's just being with yourself for that 30 seconds or, yeah, 30 seconds. Okay, great. Thank you for being a game. You can sit or stand. I'll let you make that choice. You can move, I guess, if you really want to. Go to a spot that you feel like you can be. Because a lot of our movement is literally about being comfortable, and it could be, oh, my shoulders are tight. That's valid, too. You know, it doesn't have to be deep stuff. But. So closing our eyes, let's take a second to listen to a lot of our internal resources, breath, and just how your weight falls into your legs, into the earth, how your head and rib cage and center of gravity kind of are balancing all the time. So there's always movement going on. And it begins. And let the movement come to a close. And we can open our eyes. Did anybody notice they returned to the movement, any movement that you did before? Or that you reckon? Yeah, you did?
Yeah.
Anything else you noticed or any sensation anybody wants to describe?
I had the tic-tac of the clock.
I picked up on that too, yeah.
So,
it may be good.
It's interesting, you see babies and young kids, you know, getting to it is fascinating. I mean, this resonance we're talking about now this morning. So I felt like a baby a little bit. Scaffold, and noise. So that's awareness of the outside world. You're not completely.
I had a lot of twitches, like it felt like a stream of consciousness, a little bit of this, and then I ended up like this for a little while, and I don't know what it means, but this is part of what it is. I just want to say that as a choreographer, this is why we use improv, that you're conscious and not conscious of what comes out of you, and then I will return to that, and I'll keep asking myself, what is that? What is that? So when I begin to understand it, it becomes part of the work of letting my body tell me something that then my mind interprets, I guess. Did you have any?
You know, I don't know if I do a little bit of yoga, like once a week. It's about that. It's exactly all the thing we're talking about is this. Like, you know, my yoga teacher said, yeah, if you have a thought, let it pass. Don't hold on. So you have all this metaphor, but it's exactly, it's we're talking about this. And the rest is, you know, moving is stretching. I mean, you feel your body, you feel your muscle, and it's very pleasurable.
I want to plug two dance things. I just brought them over, and I really appreciate y'all's listening and how we our conversation today. But we are bringing in a woman, Daria Halprin. She's the daughter of Anna Halprin, a pioneer in our field, who's 97 years old, and they run the Tamalpa Institute in California. And mainly it's this accessing through improvisation is therapeutic movement for healing and peace, and she's going to be in our campus April 18th, and it's a talk, and then it's a 2.5-hour workshop, and then you'll get to move with her, and so I'd love for spread the news. And then we are bringing Tricia Brown, this is a completely dance thing, onto campus. This is free, and it's site-specific work. The Tricia Brown Company was on our campus, is for my time, back in the 70s. Tricia Brown died this past year, and she's a postmodern, very iconic postmodern choreographer. And this In Plain Sight initiative is they're going to different spaces, galleries, and campuses and resetting the work. So come.
Yeah, you should go to the dance, the performance of every. I mean, it's really pretty impressive what they do in the space.
Well, thank you for initiating this, because I do love talking across disciplines, and I think we need to all do it more.
I think we need more, like, physical exercise.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So stiff.
Yeah. Any workshops for graduate students?
Yeah, come to that. Yeah. Graduate, you can audit any class. A graduate student, you can come to any class. Come to my improv class.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Body and brain.
I can send some more of those over if y'all need them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you so much.
Another woman I've trained, I'm not certified in the work, but her name is Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, and she does body mind centering work, and that's been a big, she looks at all the systems in the body as a way of understanding movement. It gets complex on either end.
When you start to talk about, I don't know, muscle memory.
There's skepticism?
Yeah. Well, there is, you know, there is something I know among my colleagues. They say, you know, what is this new agey type of thing? So you have to debunk that.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, prejudice, expectation.
Oh, So I'm Andrea Pack. I've met you, I think, like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But I'm in the neuroscience program.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm
okay.
Trained, I'm certified in Laban movement analysis.
Yes. Did
yes.
Greg introduce us?
Yes,
or
yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And so I definitely want to get more involved.
I thought you were a dancer here. No,
I'm in the neuroscience program. But what you're talking about, that skepticism, I am trying to break that.
CNBC can really break some.
I mean, I think that in some ways, obviously, this is why we have interdisciplinary dialogue. We're talking about similar things. It's just we're using different kinds of terms.
It's
incredible.
You want to talk even more about the law.
And when you try to across those terms, it actually helps you figure out
using
what those
that
terms
as
mean.
A rehab technique for stroke and traumatic brain injury patients. And so I'm really interested in any opportunity.
I was thinking
combine
we're
the two
conversation
or
Mises,
be a part of the dance community here.
Todd's
I would
yeah,
love.
Whole, this is a lot.
This sounds
of,
like I'm patching something in, but I'm actually during this
that.
Week that Yari is here. I'm not going to be able to teach my classmates. Trying to think about what do I give them outside assignment? But
there was one.
I would love for them to understand other applications
Indiana,
of the Laban system.
Oh yeah, I would.
This could you come in and be a guest?
Yeah, when is
the class? And you can come before if you want to meet them.
Faculty recitals.
The class is Monday, Wednesday. 11:30 to
1. Sorry,
and
but what is the specific date?
It would be
it's this week.
It would be the 16th
and, you
and
can
18th.
Take your eyes off
one of those days.
I
but,
was
but,
lower
but,
too.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
so.
Even when he
are you
stood
familiar
there and
with
he
the
wasn't
integrated
actually
movement?
Seeing.
Yeah. Okay, so that's
it's
where
like
I got
turn
trained.
On this
and Cadence Whittier is one of. She's more. So it was.
I mean, that's when you were talking about.
And Medley or Meaden. Sorry, Janice Meaden and.
Yeah. Yeah. Like why are
I'm
you
blanking on all their names? Oh, but Cadence is like one of the new faculty members of the certification program. And I'm actually going up to her school to give a talk on the integration of LMA and neuroscience.
That would
like
be awesome.
The week after, so
after
I would,
this,
yeah.
Okay.
So I'd be happy.
Well, let me get your email and then.
Yeah, but
right
I really
want
to try. I definitely need to get
so
it.
Much.
Yeah, so
good.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I'm always thinking about social dance. I've only performed on a stage for a thousand colors. I'm all familiar with social dance. Sometimes you dance with a partner. You get to the point where you're not thinking at all.
Yes.
Just,
oh, I'd be
yeah.
very interested.
It feels like the music pulling
you
along. Would you say most people would be authentic at that point, or
what
is that a different thing altogether?
No, I would, because
you
I
just,
think
oh,
in
performers.
Social dance and
right.
contra dancing and stuff
yeah.
like that,
yeah.
you have to keep changing partners.
Well, I
think
more like waltzing or swing dancing.
Well, to
like
me,
that.
Back to whether you know them or you don't. You know, if it's a new person you're waltzing with, there's that warm up time where you know y'all both have to kind of find. You both know what a waltz is, but you're, you know.
Sometimes you just, even with a stranger, you just start dancing. It's like, you don't have to think about this. It's just like.
I don't know. I was telling Alex that the woman that was in my one duet in the work, and Juana, I know really well. Like, we can, we just know each other, so we can connect. But the other woman, Sally O'Grady, I didn't know her that well.
I understand this project.
Yeah. I don't. I think one is that she's a very sensitive human being, and when we were improvising, she's a good improviser, and so our tool skill sets aligned well. But it came together like you're saying. It just went like whoop.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you are so easy to live with. I don't
know
literally what it is because I don't feel that with everybody.
Yeah.
But we grooved, you know.
That's
and it is, I guess it's like finding your partner in life. There is
what
is it that's clicking? When we connect, and I guess this whole thing is really about connection. Authenticity is when you have a real connection.
As an advisory committee member,
that's another way of defining it.
I just hear that word tossed around so much that I almost has a like a, oh no, not that word again. You know, does that person really know what they're talking about when I use that word? And so I'm kind of a little squeamish about even using it.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a buzzword.
We would want to encourage you to.
Well, I guess we all can be cautious of that too.
To propose programming.
So TED Talk the other day, a woman
and also what your vision
was wanting to get rid of the word feminist
sure,
because people
absolutely.
Have so, so they don't like it. And she said, well, honestly, I think the philosophy behind feminism is equality. So I've decided I'm going to call it, I'm an equalist.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we're
kind of the feminist
and,
word. I was like, okay, that's fine.
You know,
I would mean because that's what I believe, so I'll be an equalist.
That's right. What if we want to call it?
But as you said, there are buzzwords, and then
yeah.
the word gets,
just any,
I
yeah.
guess, overused. And if not, then then people are like,
okay.
you know,
that's
diversity.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, there's
whatever, I mean, I can name a number
real
of them
urgency,
in academia, and then they're not as effective because they're overused, or people are like,
yeah,
have,
thank you.
I enjoy it.
We
it's
all have our own definitions sometimes.
Pleasant relief.
I agree with you. I think it's a
it's
flow and energy and
yeah,
really
it's
connect
nice
to that person and it's easy.
One of
yeah,
the
that's
that
the thing about it.
Life
it's so easy. You just feel like you're floating.
Sort of
you
yeah.
have
ideas
no effort.
Yeah.
Sort of outside of exactly.
Other thing
I
wanted to ask you about, you're talking about when you're watching.
But so interesting.
I'm trying to remember the situation.
I don't know what's wrong with my eye.
One contact was about to
doing something.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay. Bye. Thank you so much. I'll call you later.
He's crying. We talked about the dance. So when
I don't want to
in the audience, the dance of it catches your attention.
I'll email it.
Sometimes
some.
I just like the style.
Mm-hmm.
One person I think about is Camille. I love to watch Camille
mm-hmm.
move.
Mm-hmm.
I always did. And so when she's in
Camille,
piece,
the that used to be here with Susan Eldridge.
Right,
yes,
right. So that's just an example because. You know.
I agree, and there's some I just know her personally, but and I think she has a calmness.
She does,
you know,
yeah.
and we she's real
uh-huh.
all the time.
Uh-huh.
I get you, I got it.
Yeah.
I see that.
Yeah.
She doesn't project anything.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, it's just her and the music or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm sure she would love that compliment.
I told you.
Okay, cool.
Oh,
so we have, yeah. Oh, yes, sir.
So I.
Yeah.
Understand that you're responsible for the Dancing Flowers for Peace.
Yeah.
I know several
Who do you
of
know?
Them. Emily Vorderbrugge.
Yes.
And Susan Keller.
Yes.
So, because we're all contra dancers. So
oh, awesome.
So.
I should come, I go contra dancing sometime. I love
you should.
Susan Keller and I met as contact improvisers, and
uh-huh.
then she's done a lot of things in Beacon Dance.
Right.
And then Anna, I still get together with
Anna
her
Vandenberg.
Some. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still get together with her, but I haven't seen her in a while, but
yes.
she's a brilliant woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. What
good.
Was your name?
I'm Todd Preuss.
Todd.
I'm
okay.
at the Yerkes Primate Center.
Nice to meet you, Todd.
I'm a neuroanatomist.
Ooh, I want to, I'd love you. Yeah. I got to get my coat out of your office. Are you
okay,
leaving?
Yeah. I'll do that. Yeah.
You'll be there? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Dodd is
no.
my email.
Okay. Well, let's see if that might, that would be just... Yeah, we've been doing, this is a kind of an overview course, and we've been doing so much,
no,
a lot to cover.
No,
so it's,
no,
yeah,
so.
But it's specifically for LMA stuff, or it's just somatic movement?
No, it's specifically LMA. It's called
oh,
Dance
wow.
Literacy, and it's an introduction to, you know, my own LMA training. Of course, you did effort, and then you had a whole semester
yeah.
of space. They don't get all that, but it's, they have gotten through all the areas, meaning modes of shape change, effort, space,
mm-hmm.
body. But do we do any of them a lot every day? No, not in 75 minutes. You
right,
know,
it's yeah. too short, yeah.
But what we've started to do is look more at dances and can they apply the tools to what they're seeing. So what are you seeing? Are you seeing a lot of shapes? Are you seeing form and you know all of that? And how do we, a goal of the class is dance, because it's called dance literacy, is how do we use these tools to interpret dance? You know,
yeah.
Right? But what we've not stepped into at all is, well, how could this material be used in another field? So I think that would be great.
Yeah, I would
yeah.
love
yeah.
to. And it
yeah.
is useful to, like, talk with people about it just to get their interpretation of what the integration is. Because
yeah.
I think... Like, I don't even know his name. What he was saying where there's,
Burchard.
Like,
yeah.
that people look at it as hokey. I've been running into a lot of those issues in the neuroscience world. Like, why would we use movement as a therapy? But it's really, right, to me, it's like, why wouldn't you use it
yeah.
as a therapy? But, Even there's a lab that does Parkinson's rehabilitation,
yes.
And they use
Madeline Hatton.
Yeah.
Yes, we've had her as a speaker for us.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to acknowledge what you can get out of this movement and understanding, like especially in Laban, the four categories, how really understanding how those are integrated into your movement to help you explore spaces that you didn't know existed.
Yeah.
My certification project was on, I was working with a stroke patient for 9 months, and I have video of all of like the movement that we did and before and after, and how it was all based off of Laban exercises.
And I think them saying, you know, I tried to talk to
someone.
Of course, you can't do it all every time, but
so
I think visual aids
so
do help.
We encourage
they like that and they connect to that. They're pretty good conversationalists. Sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
But most of the class are dance majors and minors. It's a GER, so I do have one student in there named Iris who's not a dancer at all.
That's
and
really
so,
cool.
It is.
Yeah.
I love that. Sometimes there's more than one, so I know she feels kind of like a loner sometimes. But yesterday we were doing shape, and I'd had music on, and I would do kind of like just stop the music, and whatever shape they ended up in, they had to fill the shape with efforts.
Uh-huh.
Like, what is this? What's the intention? And she ended up kind of just in a shape like that. And I said, so what are the efforts, Iris? And she went, I just landed here. And I was like, right, but now you get to choose. This is what artists do. We choose what it means. So then I said, I'm going to come back to you. I came back over there, and then she goes like this. And I said, you got to make it believable. Same thing, you know.
Yeah.
What are y'all seeing? And they were like, well, she looks a little sad. And I looked at Iris, and I said, is that what you're going for, Iris? And she said, yeah. She's Asian. She's yes, yes. but you have to think also culturally. This is me projecting, but you know, I don't know that they share their emotions in the same way we do as Americans. And so we were like, well, how could she convey that even more? Could her torso be more weighted? So I try to dissect little things so they can see how incremental a change can be, and it shifts the intention. To me, in healing a body, it also, little things can be huge for a body or mind to, they say this is why the tango material works for Parkinson's. It's one of the main reasons that it's an improv, and then it's not a set pattern that the brain learns, but the brain has to respond.
Yeah.
To you
and
coming.
It's so weight sharing.
Yeah. So I would love this if this.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, just let me know.
Okay.
Or if it doesn't work out this time, in the future.
Yes.
Sometime.
Yeah. If it doesn't, again, as I said, I'm trying to patch this in because I can't give them an assignment. So if that date doesn't work out, you could still
come
to another.
I think I am there. I have a conference on the Friday and Saturday of that week, but.
Yeah.
The Monday and Wednesday.
Okay.
I can be available.
Okay.
This makes me really happy. I'm glad. You know, I guess I feel like dance has been missing the past couple of years, especially
with your injury.
Yeah. And so I'm just now getting back in to movement. I'm a little nervous, but yeah. I think it's like I crave that 30 seconds was just like my body needed
it.
This.
You said your first word is excited, and you know, he was like, we should do this because he thought I know it's gonna produce self consciousness. And I was like, you don't know that really.
I think that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I love the practice of authentic movement, and I think that everyone should experience it in their life,
because
I think people get I think people get scared with the word movement and that it has to be like dance and performance, whereas like when I first was taught authentic movement, it could be sitting in a huddle for 30 minutes if that's what you wanted, if that's what you were feeling. And I think that people that aren't familiar with what movement is like automatically think ballet, you know, something
people's
out of range
of dance.
So I think it would be awesome if we could host like an authentic movement practice for graduate and faculty.
Okay, I'll write that down. Let's just do something collaborative, and we could do it on a. We can do it at a lunchtime. We have a smaller studio that has more availability than our larger studio of teaching technique classes all day long. Yeah. Or we can pick a Saturday, you know, and just let people know ahead of time and let people sign up for it. But you're probably not, are you, you're not even 40 yet, are you?
Oh, no, I'm 29.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're young. I am part of the Dancing Flowers for Peace, and this is a group of women over 40. Most of them are actually in their 60s, and we have people that just come to class on Saturdays. So we meet the first and third every week, and it's mostly improvs. We actually do authentic movement a lot. And for them, the first time they experienced it, it was like, wow.
It's really powerful. You know,
it is. And when we started the group in 2005, we did a big workshop on this campus, and I used the Women's Center to, you know, people were like, secretary, you know, people were coming from nowhere, you know, to the thing. 60 women came.
Oh, wow.
And I had women afterwards come up to me and just like crying, like, I have not played and moved like that.
Yeah.
Like, you think you, you know, since I was a little girl.
Yeah.
You know, or so.
That's so beautiful.
It really is. And as we continue to do workshops, the group, the steady group, we always say, this is it. The people have to experience this because it's learning to trust their body. Because when we're improvising, they have their eyes open. It still takes time. It takes like a half an hour at least or a whole class for them to go, oh, that's what you were. I finally freed myself. Or,
yeah.
You know? And people, older women can free themselves pretty quickly because they're ready to.
Yeah. It's but, time.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Why do I care anymore? But, I mean, we didn't get into this, but the body image, I mean, you know, our bodies change. When we're younger, we're self-conscious about our body, what our bodies look like.
Yeah.
And then I think when we're getting older, we're a little self-conscious about what they're changing into, what we're losing, you know. And I'm glad I'm losing some of that. It really is liberating and freeing because being in front of a mirror when you're training growing up, and I'm a petite woman, but I still would be like, I've got cellulite on my legs. You know,
Your
brain just kept going, wah, wah, wah. For this past concert, the costume designer had put me in this shirt that was kind of sleeveless and whatever. Anyway, and she was like, and she goes, are you okay with it? And I said, you know, I am. This is who I am now.
Yeah, you're embracing it. Yeah.
And as soon as I said it out loud, it was like, it was so freeing. It was like, I cannot care whether my arms jiggle right now. I am not I'm not training. I'm not even dancing the way I used to. But I'm still a performer, and I'm performing in this body. And it was fun. It was fun to, you know, I do want to keep dancing into my, like Anna Halper until I'm 97. So I have to accept my body as it changes.
Yeah. And that is part of authenticity.
Yeah.
Is, acknowledging the changes and accepting them.